Michael Smith, it is episode 79 of the Canes Cast. And you know what?
What?
I think it's going to be pretty easy for the Canes to be in green.
I see what you did there. It's episode 79 of Canes Cast, and the Hurricanes are breaking in, or re-breaking in, I guess, their Whalers gear ahead of Tuesday night's matchup in Boston, the second and final time this season that the Hurricanes will be wearing the throwback Whalers kits.
Yes, or if you're listening, tonight's matchup with the Boston Bruins, we always appreciate whenever you tune in to the Canes Cast, and the last time the Canes wore the green jerseys, really good effort against the Boston Bruins in PNC Arena, where we are right now recording this episode, and a few other things that we'll talk about. But I also think it's a good thing now, the way that, you know, the game goes and the monotony of a season, that you break it up a little bit. And, you know, you can not say get a different identity, but a different look on the ice for the players is never a bad thing.
Well, it shook things up in what was a pretty bad month for the Hurricanes in December. Kind of, it didn't start this stretch, obviously, because that started with the New Year's Eve win against Philadelphia. But maybe it kick-started this team, just sort of refresh things. A big win over Boston at the time.
Well, if you remember, they didn't get off to the best start in that game, and then all of a sudden found another level and found a way to beat the Bruins. And I think that that was one of those wins you look back on the season. If it continues down the path that they're on, Michael, and you can say that's a win where this team started to realize how good they could be.
Yeah, the Finns were a big part of it, both Sebastian Aho and Teuvo Teravainen. The Hurricanes will need them again to be a big part of it on Tuesday night. Because this Boston team had, while the Hurricanes had a really good February, this Boston team quietly had a really good February as well. And I say quietly because I think the Hurricanes got a lot of the attention, and rightfully so because of what they did. The St. Louis Blues got a lot of attention. The Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, continue to win basically every game. But the Boston Bruins.
All deservedly for Tampa.
Yeah, but the Boston Bruins put together a good February as well. And now you have a matchup of two really good teams in a building that always seems to provide a little extra juice in this matchup.
Oh, that's only because the elevator up to the press box is the freight elevator, and they haul garbage away on that, and that's the juice that's
stinky
in the elevator.
Yeah, it's
that elevator smells at
so does the one
TD
in Tampa
Garden.
Bay. Also the freight elevator.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So I have not gone to the press box in Tampa Bay, but I have in Boston, so we're set. Let's take a look back, Michael, shall we, before we lurch forward for the Carolina Hurricanes and the things that they were able to do, and most notably, a dominant victory over the LA Kings and the St. Louis Blues at home, and then a find-a-way-to-win game on a back-to-back second half against the Florida Panthers. But that Kings game, my goodness. I know that LA was playing the second game after they put out a good effort against the Tampa Bay Lightning the night before, but the Canes didn't let them breathe. They were all over them, and they just housed LA en route to a 6-1 victory.
The Kings were on, this was their last stop on a 4-game road trip. They were heading home after the game. I think they had basically just left it all on the ice the night before in Tampa to get a point on that, in that, what I believe was, a shootout loss? Or an overtime loss.
Overtime loss.
And then came here and had the tough task of matching up against, one of the league's best teams since New Year's Eve. And the Hurricanes just got on them early, got on them quick, and never really let the foot off the gas. I mean, a 6-0 game in the second period. Yeah, Jonathan Quick, exited after two periods. It was all Hurricanes.
Yep.
Really from start to finish. And that was a game in which that's exactly what the Hurricanes needed to do. If they came out, they got a few quick ones and put that team away early, that's the way the game was going to go, and they made sure of it. And that's it's good to see because this team has to win games like that down the stretch.
Well, a few things also out of that game. One, you lose Justin Falk to an upper body injury halfway through the game. And kind of it was a – I don't know for you, but it was kind of a mystery where it happened, when it happened. We don't really know, but we know that he did return against the St. Louis Blues. And then you lose Michael Ferland to an upper body injury. And that's one of those situations where an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You're up 6-0, or I think when he comes out of the game, it was 5-0. There's no reason for him to have to play in the game. So the Canes finished off the Kings exactly like they started. Like you just said, they didn't let up. They didn't ease up. And at the end, when L.A. tried to rough it up a little bit, I'll say goon it up too, because that's what Dion Phaneuf basically brings to the party when a game gets out of hand now in his day. And he used to be one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League. The Canes responded, but they responded the right way. They pushed back, but it wasn't really retaliation. It was immediate, you did something cheap, we're not going to stand for it. And you saw a couple of players out of character. Saku Menelainen gets into a fight, and to his knowledge, the first fight he's ever gotten into in a hockey game. You had Brock McGinn. You had Andrei Svechnikov, players standing up for each other in that situation. Jordan Martinook, those are the things that you want to see. Dougie Hamilton, you saw the Canes, and they've had it all year, but when it was questioned, and they could have just, I hate to say, skated away from it, but that's one, no. They showed their backbone. They stood up and they said, we're not going to let this happen. We don't care what the score in the game is. These shenanigans will not go unchecked. And that's what I loved out of that Kings game, besides the six goals, which I really loved.
Right.
I loved how they played that. And then against the St. Louis Blues, they fall down 1-0, Michael, and then just storm back. And you talk about a hot team. St. Louis was one of the hottest teams in the National Hockey League the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And the Canes pretty much treated them like they were the Blues from the first half of the season that was struggling to find an identity.
That was the first game since February 12th, that 4-1 win in Ottawa, that the Hurricanes had not scored first. So it had been a while. And the Hurricanes really, in the few games before that, had made a habit of scoring, not only scoring first, but scoring early in the game and forcing the opposition to chase the game early. What worked about that St. Louis game is, yes, they got scored on early, but they answered pretty shortly after and were able to tie the game. So they're not in a position where they're forced to chase the game early like they've made their opposition do so many times lately. They were able to fight through that early deficit and really just, I think, surprise St. Louis. And I think a number of teams this year have been surprised with just how quick this Hurricanes team plays. And I think they were able to surprise St. Louis and just really take it to them in all areas of the ice from start to finish. You could tell certainly a difference from that Los Angeles game. Los Angeles team that's really struggling, that, you know, probably had was looking forward just to getting back on the plane and getting back home, to a St. Louis team that was absolutely rolling. 13-1-1 in their last 15 coming into that game. Now, the Hurricanes did catch a little bit of a break because they threw Jake Allen in net and not Jordan Binnington, who had, what, 5 shutouts and 18 starts, I believe it is. It would have been interesting to see that game, I think, to see how that would have affected things. But, you know, again, the Hurricanes were able to come out and take care of business. And that's really been the story of this team since December 31st, is when they've needed to take care of business, they've done just that, and they've put together quite a run. And it's not just against, you know, teams that aren't exactly high up in the standings. Yes, they beat Los Angeles, but then they come out and beat St. Louis, one of the, by points percentage, was tops in their division, the Central Division. So the Hurricanes are beating good teams, and they're beating good teams soundly, too. I mean, that was a convincing win. They played like champs with the champ in the house, because we haven't mentioned yet Evander Holyfield here that night. And what a special night that was, really, from start to finish. I know you got to talk to him in what, the second period, was it?
Yeah, I did, in the second intermission. Great to talk to the four-time heavyweight champ, Evander Holyfield, who gave the pregame speech to the Canes that night against the St. Louis Blues. And his speech was pretty much this: if you want to be a champion, you have to go take it.
Yeah.
And Rod Brind'Amour talked about how the guys were fired up post-game. The head coach said, you know, he said exactly what I would have told the players. But when you get, and quoting the head coach, the man to say it,
right,
you know, that adds a little something. And the players were fired up. And before we get to the Florida game, let's get to that storm surge celebration with Jordan Martinook and the champ, Evander Holyfield. That might be the number one storm surge for the season.
I think it's overtaken all the rest. I mean, every time I think a new one happens, we say, okay, that one was the best. But it's going to be hard to top that one. Hard to top when you bring out the real deal.
Evander Holyfield.
And, you know, the TKO and Jordan Martinook. Really, really well played by Martinook there. Really sold the punch
You know what I was impressed with?
Yeah.
The footwork and a little bit of the hand speed there by Martinuk. I'm like, is this for real? Oh no. I went to the end of Rocky III, where Apollo's like, you don't want none of this.
You know, I knew he wasn't gonna do anything, but
yeah,
when Holyfield stepped out, you know, of the bench area, I was like, oh, this I kind of got scared for a minute. I got scared for Jordan Martinuk just a little bit, because you know, he put on the boxing gloves. He was gonna be the one that to take one for the team, and he did.
Can I give you a little behind the scenes?
Yes.
So
please do.
When a game is clearly in hand, I go behind the Canes bench because I do the first star of the game interview.
Right.
Well, I walked by, and there is a little office for the equipment managers where they sharpen skates and take care of the players' equipment that's in there. And I looked in, and the champ was in there with the gloves on, and he was warming up. Like, it was like he's throwing jabs, he's going through
a little
all
that. Shadow boxing.
He was shadow boxing, yeah. Getting the lather going, and he was ready. So if anybody wanted to get froggy, ooh, he was ready to leap.
It was a
fantastic storm surge.
Yeah.
And I know the crowd that stuck around to watch it absolutely loved it.
I thought, because I didn't know what was coming, I thought at first that maybe it was just going to be sort of a stage thing between two
yep.
Hurricanes, but to involve Evander Holyfield on a night like that after a win like that was really cool to see.
I was going to say, can we also go back? The commissioner of the National Hockey League was yep. in the house for the Kings game.
He was.
And he stuck around, and he watched the storm surge. That was the one that I thought was the number one, where the team comes out, the new projection system at PNC Arena puts the slogan, bunch of jerks on the ice, and the team handed out or tossed to the crowd T-shirts, the bunch of jerks T-shirts, to a more than admiring, adoring, and appreciative Canes crowd that was here. It was fun.
It was an encore style thing because they left the ice. Everybody's yeah. like, uh-oh, what's going on? Stormy's at center ice leading the clap. And then they race back onto the ice. It was energetic. It was fun. It was the first time, I will say, that they got the rest of the organization involved because obviously they yeah. needed the T-shirts.
Yes.
So we knew that was coming. But all these other surges... And now, obviously, too, they had to get, you know, the okay from Evander Holyfield for Friday's surge. But all the other surges have been organically thought out by this crew, whether it's
well, the Holyfield storm surge was organic, too. That happened
right.
that day.
That was just a, hey, he's here, you know, can we get him involved? But all of these ideas are just organically thought about in the locker room, maybe at lunch, you know, that day before the after the morning skate. Or sometimes I think there have been a couple where they've just been on the ice and said, okay, what are we going to do? Let's do this. So it's fun to see the creativity yep. and they've, they keep topping themselves. I don't know where the team goes from here. If you look ahead to Friday in the game against Winnipeg, going to be a tough game. But if you think about potential surge ideas, I don't know how you top, you know, bringing out Holyfield.
Well, you know what? Just sit back and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, exactly.
Michael, that's exactly what it's been in this building. It's been a fun ride. The fans are appreciative, and I get to do the Bob Uecker as Harry Doyle. Hey, Canada, if you haven't noticed, but attendance is growing.
Yes.
Here at PNC Arena.
Growing acceptance.
Exactly. And I think that everything goes hand in hand. And
yes, of
it's
course.
It's also a fun building to be in again, especially when the Canes are rolling. You get the crowd howling again. You get the wave going. Now, I am not the biggest proponent for the wave, but if the fans are into it and it gets everybody going, go.
Yeah,
go for it.
Sure.
Have fun. And
who
that's
are we
what
to
it
say
is.
That to not have fun?
Oh, that's I'm for it.
Yes.
I am all for fun. That's the way that this should be. And you know what else happens out of fun? That byproduct of that, teams become tighter. Mm-hmm. When they have fun. And when I say tighter, it's in a good way. Close-knit. Not like tight pressure, but
right.
they become a close-knit
unit.
They're
not clinching.
No. They're having fun.
Yes.
And everybody's playing for everybody else. And as far as the Canes are concerned, that's what they're trying to get to. That's the name of the game right now, is to relax. And I think that there's for the course of a season for a team that hasn't had success in a while, you go into a season believing that you can be good. Then you get to a point where you start thinking that you're good. And the Hurricanes are now to the point where they know they're good. They know they're a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And that stems from the head down from Rod Brindamore with what he's done. And you know what good teams do, Michael? They find ways to win games that they shouldn't. And that was the game in Florida where they get out to a red hot start. Again, goals by Brock McGinn and Greg McKegg, 39 seconds apart?
Yeah, in the first, 2:05 of the game.
And you're
welcome thinking. Welcome to the NHL, Sam Montembeau.
Montembeau, correct.
Montembeau.
Well done. And you're sitting here going, all right, a first start ever for a goalie in the National Hockey League. The Canes are all over him. This is going to be another Kings game.
That's
this
a
is
tough
going to
assignment,
be another.
By the way, welcome to the show, kid. Yeah. Here's the hottest team in the league.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Enjoy. But I'm sitting there going, this is going to be another Kings game. This is going to be a 6-1 romp, and Canes head back. But they eased off the throttle. And, you know, that's human nature.
It is.
You want to say that you're going to play 60 minutes perfectly, but what that game showed for me is how this team – they're not out of anything, and they are becoming the thing that stops them, not the opponent. It's their level of play, and when they're at their game, they're tough to beat. They came off of it. They trailed 3-2, but then they get a huge goal by Brett Pesce, and then overtime, Peter Mrazek looked like Dominic Hasek. That's the only example I can give you because I saw it a million times in my life. But in overtime, to skate out of your crease and poke check, Alex Barkov, one of the best.
Matheson.
Matheson. Yep. But then he comes up with a huge save right on Barkov.
On Huberdeau.
On
Huberdeau.
Barkov,
poked it ahead to
thank
to
you.
Huberdeau,
I knew that Barkov was involved somehow, some way.
Fin-on-fin crime when he stole it from Aho at the other end.
That's where my memory gets a little fuzzy on these things here.
Foggy. The whole sequence was insane because, I'm still reeling over the poke check when it comes back the other way and then goes back down and Huberdeau's coming in alone and Mrazek with the much more conventional, I think it was a blocker save there. And then for the Hurricanes corral, and that's what happens in 3-on-3 overtime is a save or a rebound that goes wide at one end, and then you have
it's
a chance
back
right
the
back
way.
The way. Yeah, and that's what the Hurricanes were able to do. Aho pokes it ahead to Niederreiter and then skates about as hard as he can down the ice to make it a 2-on-1. And Niederreiter contributing in basically every game since he's been acquired by this team to just finesse the puck through Keith Yandle, a veteran defenseman who did about as much as he could on that play to defend the pass. But Niederreiter finds a way to thread the needle over to Aho for the easy tap-in. And that's ball game.
And that's exactly how this team has just done for the last 2 months. They just find ways, create opportunities, and then I'm glad you brought that up about how Sebastian Aho skated as hard as he possibly could to make it a 2-on-1.
Because that's at the end of a shift, too. He had been on the ice for a good 30 seconds or so.
Oh, longer than that, I'd say. And they outworked their opponent. Speaking of Nino Niederreiter, just a quick numbers crunch on what he has brought to the team.
I want to say 18-18.
Points-wise, yeah.
Close,
but since he joined the Carolina Hurricanes, I want to make sure that I get the numbers right. They are, I believe, 14-4-1 in the 19 games that he's played.
They couldn't have imagined a better fit for him. Because we've talked about it. Anytime you bring a new body into the locker room, a new personality, a new player into the locker room, there could be some concerns about how they fit in, not just on the ice but off the ice. And you've seen in Columbus where they've brought, 5 new guys in, and they're having a tough time figuring out where they all fit.
Well, Niederreiter was the perfect fit.
He was the perfect fit.
He is one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet.
Yes.
Did a Canes Corner with him on the 28th of February. He was the guest, and he signed every autograph. He talked to everybody. He got out of his seat to go down and take pictures. The show's starting. He's speaking German with a fan who brought her family in there. He's just a great guy.
And, by the way, a
perfect fit on the ice and off the ice for this organization.
And we will get him on the podcast. And we've talked about it for weeks, getting him on the podcast. And there was 1 week we ran into technical difficulties with the mic and couldn't get it. It's going to happen soon. So stay tuned for Nino Niederreiter on the Canes Cast in the coming weeks.
If I had to guess, there's one that seems to be a natural fit where we'd like to get him.
I see it coming up.
Yeah, just so we're all clear on that, Michael.
Yeah.
Not going to give any trade secrets away. A few other things that the Carolina Hurricanes have been able to do, though, and hopefully I can remember names on this one and who was making plays, but the alumni game for the Carolina Hurricanes was Sunday afternoon. Good time had by all.
Yes.
A 13-12 win in overtime for the red team over the black jerseys.
I still haven't fact-checked it, but I believe the first overtime game in the alumni game.
I have not been told any different, so okay. It's our podcast, and I'll go with yes.
Sure.
That's it.
Why not?
Joe Thoman, Western New York native, with a game winner in overtime. Ross Mandel with a hat trick. Rod Brindamore, 100% passing percentage for the red team.
Yes.
H. Wade Minter, who invented a new style of goaltending, which is the lie-down style.
Yes.
You've had the stand-up, the butterfly, and now the lie-down. So that's how that worked out. But it was fun, and there was 3,400 fans here, came in on a Sunday afternoon to watch the alumni, and man, what a great time when you get to see former Canes and guys who were like original Hurricanes, like Steve Rice, come out. No padding on.
Not even a helmet. Rice.
No, not a helmet.
Just a
nothing.
Hat.
Just playing. Just having... He's
going out for
school.
A little twirl.
Going old school. You know, he's grandfathered in, I guess, if he wanted to go there. But that was just an absolute great time. And you catch up with some players. Tim Gleason played. Mm-hmm. George Alves makes an appearance in the third period playing goal for the Carolina Hurricanes. Shane Willis, of course, on the ice. Eric Cole, who looks like he can still play. There were
really
a few
strong
moments.
Beard game, too.
Oh, yeah. I think the beard got in the way on one of his handles, though. But Eric Cole, who... just honestly is one of the, for my money, one of the best American-born power forwards this league ever saw, can still turn on the Jets. So can Shane Willis. And Rod Brindamore, he told me, I think last year, that you know he wanted to be a defenseman. You know, that if things could be different.
Yeah.
He basically played defense in the alumni game, and we're going to find out. There was a partner who was very happy to have Rod Brindamore on the blue line. Joining us here on the CanesCast podcast, Canes defenseman, Stanley Cup champion, great broadcaster, and he still has it on the blue line. At least that's what we saw from the alumni game, Aaron Ward. Ward, what's it like? You put the skates back on? Do you fall back in the routine or a little different for you now?
The routine was the same. It's whatever you're doing is you wait for Roddy to take the lead and just figure out from there. Yeah, he was the same Roddy. And actually, I will tell you that come the third period, we had a little bit of chemistry. We had some fun out there, but clearly he's in better shape than I am because I started to make him retrieve all the pucks. Even if it was on my side, I just looked at Roddy and gave him the nod, like, it's all you, kid.
Well, I was going to say, how good a shape is he in? Could he jump in and play in today's game?
At least, well, like, I kept looking for my partner, and I realized he was down the offensive end, and I was just getting up to the blue line. So, there was a full offensive push. I think that considering that the other team, the alum, we're taking liberties with some of the paid customers and the goalies and the way they were launching pucks at heads, then I think Roddy started to get in his comfort zone that he's going to up his compete a little bit. So
I was just about to ask, when does it kind of become a game? Like, do you know, like, all right, we're playing against campers. We're like, oh, you're on the ice. Everything's fair game for this thing.
I think it's always a game, given the fact that you have – some of your familiar alum on the other end, and you know, you don't never want to give them the upper hand. And you know, we're going to go up after this and sit around in a room and drink and eat and talk crap like is customary in the game of hockey. You know, and I'll give you the standard, everybody's going to rip on the one or two guys that tried too hard, and everybody's going to rip on the one or two guys that sucked real bad. That's why you just want to nestle yourself somewhere between the top and the bottom so no one noticed you. I mean, that's actually a career goal when you're playing the National Hockey League. As long as no one notices you, it means you haven't done anything wrong.
Michael, that's why he's one of the smartest guys ever to play in the National Hockey League. You listen to the answers, you let Roddy do the work, you find your spot, you nestle in.
That makes sense. And would you say you nestled in today?
I did. Again, like, I relied on Roddy to do most of it. I had one bad turnover in the all-alum shift because I realized as I was out there, I forgot what color I was. So when you recognize the campers, right, you know who to pick out and that's who you're going to pass to, but all of a sudden they're off the ice and we're all former alum. And Gleason got a great pass tape to tape, and he was on the other team. So for me, in the neutral. So, but and the worst part is, I coach U15 AA team, and I had a couple of the kids there. And much like I do to them, I got off the ice, and I was within earshot, and I heard them talk about the giveaway. So,
how different is that though to go behind the bench, even if it's you know under 15, under 10 kids? Is it a different feeling for you as a coach, or is it because you're thinking this is what I would do, or are you starting to enjoy that aspect of it now?
Well, there's a balance between your expectations and what's reality, and I think that's just the constant struggle when you have young kids. You know, it's a travel team. You play against some elite teams around the country. And you got to step back from where you think hockey should be because that's the way you played it and realize that certain things are attainable and certain things aren't. But, again, they're 15, and you can see the growth over the course of the season, and that's usually what you can rest your hat on, saying that's the sense of accomplishment there. speaking of coaching, there's got to be no shock in your mind about the job that Rod Brindamore has done this year with this group. Did you kind of know he had that gene? If he wanted to do this, he would be successful at it?
I'll tell you, having him as my captain, not only learning a lot about the game and how it's supposed to be done the proper way, I think that Roddy too adapted over time, and he's kind of gravitated away from, you know, Roddy took care of what he needed to take care of, and that was the example he set. And I think he evolved a little bit when he got later into his career. He started to see there's different personalities and different approaches to maybe the game, the way the game's played, and you can see it kind of translate in the way he coaches. Actually, I got to tell you, I picked his brain most of the game. I was mic'd up, and we started talking about the fact that, you know, I don't know if I could play this game now because he preaches puck possession for his defensemen. They rag the puck a ton. And I talked about lobbing and how lobbing the puck in the neutral zone to a skating forward is a tactical thing I never even thought about. You know, lobbing for us was getting out of trouble. Now it's become something that is utilized against opponents. So his adaptability to the game and his understanding and his dedication, I mean, it's a foregone conclusion to be successful. I think he has the perfect personality, and you can never question him as a leader, and that's what a coach is, right, a leader. You can never question his work ethic and his dedication to what he's doing.
How much has the game, because you watch the game a lot now today, how much has it changed, and how have the athletes changed with it?
Well, I know they don't go throw a couple beers back after a game like we used to. These guys it's a generational game, right? These guys know more about how their bodies function, right? We used to wait till, well, at least I did. I waited till June, right? You get done the playoffs, you give yourself a full month. These guys don't do it. And they have strength conditioning coaches. They have all these, you know, skill coaches, things that we didn't even contemplate having, right? And the game for them has evolved into a business. We used to play it and we relied a fair amount on skill and a certain amount on conditioning and whatever goes with that back in our day. Now these guys are in tune with every facet of the game, every facet of the body. They know about the mental part of the game. They know about what they need to do in terms of preparing themselves based on travel, right? Things that never crossed our minds. So the game's played at a different speed. I mean, that was the joke I was saying to Roddy. I don't know if I could keep up with the game. And you know, I had the pleasure for the St. Louis game in the business I'm in. I had three guys from Great Britain here, and I had to talk the game out. And some of the questions they asked is, you know, what would I have done in that situation? I would have said I probably wouldn't have been on the ice at that time because I wouldn't be against those speedy players, you know. And it's great to see from the perspective of a former player to see how the game has, and I keep using the word evolved, it's gotten better, right? We haven't stepped back. I think people resistant to the taking out of the physical power forward player. We still have those, but those guys themselves have to have many, many, many more attributes other than just being able to run a guy over and shoot the puck hard and get in position. So this game is a great game, and it sells itself now.
Aaron, one more thing for you that would be perfect to ask, because you played in Detroit, Original Six, Hockey Town had it forever, Boston, same thing. You played here too. It was, quote, non-traditional when you came down here, but you won a cup. And a lot of talk about, you know, the storm surge and all that. And, you know, what do you think about it? Because what's wrong with having fun in particular and in the market that you're in? You know, don't you almost have to, in these situations, you know, you play to your market, you play to your fans. And if the fans like it and it's not hurting anybody, it's a fun thing, right? It should be good, not maybe downplayed or being frowned upon the way some people are looking at it.
Yeah, from the perspective of the outsiders that were critical of it, you know, you got to know the market. And I think it's short-sighted for people to be critical and kind of demeaning in the way they talk about how this is done. Listen, again, I keep using the word, it evolved, right? It started out with the Icelandic clap at center ice. Then it started to get a little bit more fun. And the idea that the fans grasp it, they endorse it, players, you know, I would have an issue as a player if I was put in a comfortable position. I've talked to Justin Williams and guys are all on board. You know, it's getting them attention. I mean, Carolina's put themselves on the map for some positivity, for some having fun. And there's sticklers in this world that sometimes just feel like they always have to interject and offer their opinion. And I know this is your podcast, so I'll say it, take the pickle out of your ass. And that's really my analogy for this is, if you don't like it, don't lose to them. That's the truth. It's don't come into this building and come with a halfway effort and expect to beat this team. It's fun how they've stepped up with Holyfield. Even as a guy who I would tell you that I left before it started to happen, now I stick around and check it out. So it's for what it is, it's got a life of its own. Regular season, have at it. Have some fun.
Always good to chat with Aaron Ward. Some wise words, I think, from Wardo on really how different the game is. He's watched a couple games this season from Press Row, and we've had the, or I've had the chance to talk with him just about how different, you know, he's seeing things from back in the day when he played, because it is just so different. And also some color forwards on the Storm Surge. Yeah,
thank you for that. But I wanted to, I think he was the perfect guy, and that's why I wanted to ask him, as a guy who played in Detroit and a guy who played in Boston, that why this works here and everybody gets in a snit, or as he said, I'm now going to be a little hesitant to eat pickles when we're in Canada, but I can put it in these terms. He knows what this market's about, too, because he played here in the good times for the Cup team and understands that you can't do everything the same way. And things, the game changes, and how things happen change. But it was great to see Aaron Ward on the ice. It was great to see all of these players get a chance to come back and play. And you know, a lot of guys make this home now, especially like our next guest here on the Canes Cast.
Tim Brent joining us here on the Canes Cast. Tim, you still got it. You still got the wheels, but member of the 2019 alumni game. How much fun is it for you to put the equipment on and get back out and have a little bit of competitive hockey in you?
Yeah, it's. I think I do it about once a year now, so it's fun. It's good to see a bunch of familiar faces, and we try and get together once a month as an alumni group now, but always fun to put skates on and play with these guys, and also enjoy just getting to play with people who love the game so much, and all the campers, I guess is what they call them now. It's fun getting to see them enjoy it.
How much do you see those campers just really enjoy the whole experience? Like when they look over and get a pass from you or try to dangle around, you know, Aaron Ward or Rod Brindamore. How much is enjoyment do you see from that?
I mean, you can see it all over their face, and they tell you too. I mean, they think it's the coolest thing, and you know, they think we're such good players, which is kind of funny because we're so old and rusty now that if they got the opportunity to get out there and play with the guys who are current, they would be blown away, I think.
How much do you have to be mindful of? You're about to go put a move on somebody and be like, it is a camper, so I can't go the A move here. Or is it once you're on the ice, hey, it doesn't matter. All is fair in the game. The game's the game.
No, I think they're so generous in their contribution to the charity that you want to try and make sure their experience is great and get them the puck and let them have the joy of scoring a goal in PNC and in front of a bunch of people. So, you know, that's always our goal as alumni guys is to get them the puck. But when it's one-on-one alumni, that's a different story.
when you hop over the boards for that all-alumni shift, how much do the competitive juices start flowing?
Yeah, that's when things ramp up a bit. And, you know, the guys, the passes start getting crisp and the skating gets a little faster and guys are grabbing each other and hooking each other. And that's a lot of fun. I wish we had enough guys where we could put together a skate or something once a week and get out there and do that. It's a good workout. And, just fun.
Well, you still live here in Raleigh. What was this area? I mean, your time was here. You had a couple of seasons under your belt. You could have moved anywhere. Why was this the place where you're like, I love it here. I think I'm going to put some roots down here for a while.
Yeah, I say it all the time. The people here were the driver for me to move here permanently with my family. And super friendly, respectful. We love the Southern tradition here. And that was the thing that drew me here the most. And then outside of that, we have great weather here, heck of a lot better than where I grew up. And the ability to get outside and enjoy the outdoors. So all things we love.
Tim Brent. Such a nice guy. Love catching up with him anytime we get the chance to. He's doing pretty well in the real estate business here in Raleigh, making his home here in North Carolina. He, of course, spent time with the Maple Leafs, among a few other teams in the NHL. Played here for, what, how many seasons? A couple?
Two seasons.
Yeah, two seasons. Was a valuable asset in the faceoff circle and on the penalty kill. A good depth piece for the Hurricanes. Fun to have him out for the alumni game. Just a fun afternoon, as you said, really all around. Amazing to me how well Rod Brindamore just fit in and could still play. I mean, I think he could jump in into today's game and put in a good 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I believe
that's all you'd need from him, too.
I believe it. And they would be exactly what you just said, a good 10 minutes.
Good 10 minutes.
He would win. Is it possible to win more than 100% of the faceoff?
He would find a way to.
He would. Rod Brindamore tonight, 105 on the faceoff circle.
And you did a really nice job with the play-by-play arena in the absence of John Forslund.
No.
Does Sean Hill have a future in analyst work?
Absolutely he does.
His analysis there in the after the first period,
was
spot on. Really good.
Kane's defenseman, Sean Hill, big part of that team that went to the Stanley Cup in 2002 and won the Eastern Conference Finals, basically just laid out for the crowd, here's what happened in the first period. And he spared no feelings. It was outstanding. Was trying to point out to the players in the red jerseys, the alumni, that they have to pass the puck to those great folks who paid their money to be here and be part of the alumni game, the 2019 alumni game. They needed the puck too.
Yes.
And you can't have four alumni on the ice all the time. So, yeah,
as fun as it might be.
It was a great time, though. It really was. And, you know, both sides started laughing with each other, so it was a lot of fun.
It was great. And one of my favorite parts of the game is when the alumni all hop onto the ice together and you just see everything pick up a little bit. You see the competitive juices start flowing a little harder. You see these guys, you know, remember what it was like to be out there and play with one another. It's always fun to see. And it's also fun to see these people who play in beer leagues around the triangle, you know, come in and get to share the ice with guys like Rod Brindamore, who has his number in the rafters here, with guys like Aaron Ward, who have won Stanley Cups, Eric Cole, getting to share the ice with them, get passes from them, send passes to them, maybe throw a little shoulder into one of them in the corner. It's fun. It's a lot of fun to watch. It doesn't get old for me, and I don't think it gets old for the people who have played in it a few times, because we have some returning attendees, you know, each and every year, and they seem to enjoy it just as much each time they do it. So a lot of fun to watch. If you've never come out to it, definitely make it a point to next year. It's free parking, free admission. There's really no reason not to.
They had to open up three more sections for the fans who came in.
And how about the chuck-a-puck? I saw a number of pucks land in the penalty box area.
Yeah, and despite my best efforts to say that you'd be ejected if you do that, luckily you find a good spot. If you're ever in that position where there's a chuck-a-puck going on and you're in the area that you could get hit with a puck, just lean back against the wall, because it's hard for the trajectory of the puck to come exactly
down.
That's true.
I mean, you'd have to accurately float it right over the glass, and that's not where you're trying to hit anyway.
No.
You're trying to win. And there were a few.
There were two right on the dot.
Yeah.
Right on the dot.
Really closely measured to find the winner yesterday in that chuck-a-puck contest.
One on his edge. One on its edge, though. That was the winner.
Mm-hmm.
So in Brooke Nen or New or Ner, it was hard to.
One of those.
The last name was N-E and then take a guess.
Brooke N.
Good enough.
Congratulations.
Exactly. So you won a jersey, and we greatly appreciate you being here.
And tickets.
Oh, that's
true. To a future game and a post-game meet and greet. Whole package.
So that's what it's all about, folks. Having fun. Having good times. All right, Mr. Smith. We do have a question to get into.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw it earlier.
Yeah, you did. And we will have it asked right now. And it's from one of your favorite people in the world.
My mom?
No.
Oh.
Our good friend.
Oh, Carl Cucumbers.
That is now his name. He's, although, you know what?
Kikis, Carl Kikis.
Look here, Carl Celery. You either go Kane's Cast or Cheat Mail. Don't try to get on both
of them. Don't toe the line.
Well, he's trying to get on both of them. You pick one or the other.
And now he's probably going to get on both of them. You're gaming the system, Carl.
No. The game is the game.
He's just playing the game.
Well, it's a good question to ask.
It is a good question, so we'll tackle it.
Although, he says Kane's podcast question, but then he puts Cheat Mail on here. Folks, come on now. Work with us. Would you like to see a clock closer to the ice, for example, in the boards or above the goalie where the goal lights are? This is something that the NHL is talking about doing, Michael. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, and they're going to talk about it more this week at the GM meetings in beautiful Boca Raton. Much different weather down there than what we're going to experience up in Boston here in a few short hours.
19 degrees in Boston.
And a lot of snow. I can guarantee there is zero snow on the ground in Boca. For me, I don't really care because up in the press box or wherever I might be roaming during the game, it's going to be up in the press box. Up in the press box or even watching it on TV, for me, it's not going to make much of a difference. But if you can make the argument that it would be good for, say, a defenseman on a power play who's racing back to get a puck after a clear, he doesn't have to, divert his eyes away from the ice and look up to try to find, how much time is left on the PK or even just players.
Or PK. If you're a penalty killer, you need to know, too.
Or if just players skating down the ice, maybe late in a period, you don't have to, again, look up, take your eyes off the ice, and try to find how much time is left in the period. It's strange to me because I don't think it's a huge problem. Like, I don't think there's been a player injured because he was looking up at the clock or anything. Like, it's strange because I don't believe there's an impetus for this discussed rule change I know of.
I think what it is, the impetus for it is so the players know exactly how much time is on the clock, meaning in the last minute of play, you're coming in, you can look up and see the clock. But you know what? If you're skating in with 10 seconds left, you're not looking for the clock. You kind of know how much is left.
Well,
I can tell you, the guys on the bench, having been in between the benches, the guys on the bench are screaming the time.
Right. That's about communication, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's fine. I'm not really sure of the point. And then I think the league might push back a little bit because it is going to take away, valuable advertising space on the boards.
Yeah. I mean, that's one. Would I like to see this? No. Because I'm not playing. So
yeah.
If you're asking me as a fan or a broadcaster, no, because I know where the clocks are.
Right.
And I know where to look for it.
Yeah, exactly.
I get the point of it for a player. Now, if there was a shot clock in the NHL.
Right.
Like, if you had the puck in the zone and you had to shoot the puck within 30 seconds, then, yeah, absolutely, you got to find a way to move the clock closer to the ice so the players can see it.
Just like the shot clock in basketball is right there above the backboard, so you know.
Yeah. Or if it's not, they put it in the corners so you can see it if there's a malfunction there. But
or
yeah.
Play clock in football, again, in the sight lines. But there's not an equivalent of that in hockey. And when you're on power play, when you're on penalty kill, you've got guys communicating how much time is left. I don't really see the need for it, but if the players want it, then who's to say no, I guess.
Again, this comes down to, a player issue. If the players feel that this is a need or if the league, from a competition standpoint, feels that it could help, I hate to use this word. It's definitely a legit question, but I'm ambivalent to it. If they want to put it in there, go ahead. If they don't, it's not going to ruin anything for me with how the game is played, at least from what I've seen for the over, 90 years of hockey that's been out here.
Yep.
Got another question. This is from Michael Hardison. Do you see Svechnikov being moved up to the second line or even first next season?
Yeah, potentially. I think what the coaching staff has been able to do this year is, I don't want to say ease him into the league, but...
Oh, but you bring him along.
Right. You're not forcing him to be more than he is at this point in his career, because we have to remember, he's just 18 years old. This is his first year in the National Hockey League. They're not trying to fit what is going to be a round peg and a round hole in future years, but right now... is maybe a square peg just because of his age, and he doesn't have that experience just yet. The coaching staff is really showing him, I think, what it takes to be successful. They want to see certain things out of his game. They want him to develop his game, and they're letting him do it without having the pressure of playing on one of those top two lines. I think he's had a great rookie season. I think he's going to have a great career. But there's no rush, I don't think, right now to really force him higher into the lineup.
No, I don't see the reason to do that just yet. And look, if it turns out next year that he's a guy who should be in the top six, he'll be in the top six. But right now you take a look at how the team is constructed, and I think a lot has to do with the offseason. You know, does Michael Ferland come back? Do you get to sign him to a free agent contract? Who comes in? Who else
right.
is,
do the,
is ready
do
to
Do the
play?
Hurricanes make a move with one of their defensemen to acquire a forward? I mean, there are tons of questions about the makeup of the lineup that will be much clearer once we hit the offseason.
But next year,
yeah,
I can see it. But yeah. At the same time, I quite enjoy the line he's on right now.
Seems yeah. to work out all right.
It's playing well, and it doesn't matter if it's Jordan Martinook or Lucas Walmark as his center, although I think I kind of like Walmark centering for Svechnikov and Martinook.
I do too.
But that's one of those things where even when it's Martinook and McGinn and Svechnikov, that's a good line too. That was a good line in Florida for the majority of the game. So you know what, folks? There's nothing wrong with having a question about asking a guy to move up in the lineup, and if he can't, that just means you've got depth in the organization. So that's where the Canes are. So those were questions from fans, and now...
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
Do you have one?
Well, you're going to have to start. I've been on a roll lately.
Yeah.
And by on a roll, I mean I've had like two in a row.
Well, one in a row.
One?
One that you came up with on your own, and then one that you
had. Oh, was it fan submitted?
Yeah, the fan submitted.
All right. Well, I'm going to make it two in a row. I'm just going to... defer to the second half.
All right.
But do you have one?
I do.
Okay.
Are we going to see an outdoor game in Carter-Finley in the next two seasons for the Carolina Hurricanes?
The next two. Well, okay. So can we go ahead and omit 19-20?
Yes.
Because that's obviously.
So 2021 is what I'm looking at.
So 2021 at the earliest, 21-22.
I'm gonna narrow it down. 2021. Ooh. Will we? We'll see it in the 2021 season.
I mean, I would love to.
I'm asking you if you want to keep it. If not, send it back.
I'm gonna take it. I'm gonna take it because I want to see one. Then,
could we also say cameo appearance for Luke Decock from the News and Observer here today?
There it is. Rock and roll, baby.
He'd love to take part in the Like It Keep It segment.
I would love to see it then. So selfishly, I'm gonna take it. I think things are progressing as they should. I mean, obviously it's not happening next year. The outdoor games have been announced for the 19-20 season. But, you know, could the Hurricanes host it in the seasons beyond? Yeah, I don't see why not. Tom Dundon, I know, has had it really near the top of his list since he got introduced as owner in January of 2018. Gary Bettman, NHL commissioner, and the league seem to be on board with at least the idea, and they've been pleased with events that have been hosted here in the past. So the draft in 04, the All-Star game in 2011, the Stanley Cup final in 2006.
Yeah. Big events have gone off well here.
Yeah, and so the question, really the concerns that he laid out, the weather is not a concern. The weather's not a concern because the NHL played an outdoor game in Los Angeles where it was 80 degrees during daytime, 63 degrees at puck drop, went off without a hitch.
The only thing you have to worry about is rain with an outdoor game.
Correct.
That's
but
it.
They were able to play through that even in Philadelphia. So that's a concern no matter where you play. Rain would be the only concern. Weather, other than that, is not really a concern at all. The concerns would be, can they set up this event in the way that league events have been in previous years, just in terms of scale and scope? And I think the league can totally do that. They proved it, I think, here in 2011 with the All-Star game they put on. And can it live up to that? Now, because in the past few years, the league has played, it's been very scenic, these games in Notre Dame Stadium, or they're going to play at the Air Force Academy next year in Colorado. Yankee Stadium. There have been these scenic events, but I think bringing an outdoor game to Raleigh and at Carter-Finley Stadium would be a chance to highlight hockey in I don't like saying it, but I'll say it, a non-traditional market. A chance for the Hurricanes to maybe host a divisional opponent, say the Washington Capitals, maybe an old Southeast Division matchup with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Maybe the Nashville Predators.
Maybe the Nashville. Like, there would be
there are things
an
that make
enticing
sense.
Matchup.
Yeah, there are things that make sense. There are things that fit.
And I think it would it wouldn't make sense under the Winter Classic banner, but it would totally make sense under the Stadium Series banner. Carter Finley's a great stadium for it. It's got kind of a tight lower bowl.
Yep.
There would be good sight lines everywhere. You wouldn't – now, think about, you know, watching a game in Lincoln Financial Field from the upper level. Like, the sight lines, you're not going to be able to see
anything.
You're paying
to say that you were there.
Correct. But if you're at Carter Finley Stadium, if you're buying a ticket to watch this game at Carter Finley Stadium, for an outdoor game, the seats are going to be pretty good.
Yeah. And again, the Hurricanes, as Michael Smith has just pointed out, they have the facilities across the street with Carter Finley. And, you know, yes, you've got to get the NC State Wolfpack on board, but I get the feeling they would be.
Right.
And they have the tradition because they've shown out when big events have come to town with the National Hockey League. So I don't think that there would be any question mark about the success of an outdoor game for the Carolina Hurricanes here.
And it's not just that that would have to be the only Stadium Series game either. I mean, this league has done 3 or 4 Stadium Series games
in a season. But if it is the only one, you do the Winter Classic, that's the Stadium Series game, and you move on, and that's fine with it. And, you know, just – I would be excited just because you get another jersey that you can look at.
Yeah,
that
well,
you could wear for the game,
and you get another one of the league's teams to be able to play in an outdoor game. I think there's still 6 or 7 that haven't, and I think a few of those are getting crossed off next year. Nashville's playing in Dallas, but you've got some of these teams like the Hurricanes, like both of the Florida teams that haven't played in outdoor games, and it's. They're like, good teams,
like,
and it's
the Canes in Tampa makes a lot of sense. And look, there's no inside information there. That's just that makes a lot of sense. That's all.
We're just spitballing here, trying to be optimistic about the future of outdoor games. Yeah, I hope to see it happen because it would be a lot of fun for everybody involved, for the players, for the organization, for the fans, and the Hurricanes have a pretty good team that I think people deserve to see nationally.
All right, so do you got one for me?
Nope.
Because this will be it. Shocking.
Sure don't.
All right, fine.
My streak ends here.
That's how we'll end it. Wow. Cal Ripken-esque from you.
Well, I figured I'd just go ahead and shut it down because practice is wrapping up and we'll have to go into the room soon.
All right. Should we tell everybody there will be a modified day for the next Canescast because there's a game next Monday?
Yeah, I guess we'll do it on Tuesday.
Sure.
Look
for it.
Tuesday-ish.
How about this? Look for it Wednesday the 13th.
Yeah, because we fly back from Colorado that night, next Monday night. It's going to be a late one.
Yeah, just so you know.
You can do the math. It's about, 4:30 East Coast time, a.m.?
Yeah. When we get here. Yeah.
It's going to be
So that'll
morning.
Do it for the man who can tell time but can't come up with a like it, keep it. He's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
You're
play-by-play.
You're a treasure for the web.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're a treasure
Stop.
For television and
no.
for play-by-play in the alumni game, too.
Thank you.
Yes. You did a great job.
Well,
fans enjoyed it.
You are.
There was a lot of great feedback.
Well, you're really far too kind.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Yes, we will. Bye.
Thank you.